Chapter 6, The New Christian Rite, Born Again. At first glance, it seemed too good to be true. Jerry Falwell, once the scourge of liberals, feminists, humanists, homosexuals, Bolsheviks, Democrats, and atheists, was busy watering down the evangelical postulates of Liberty University in order to finagle $60 million in tax money for his financially floundering school. New Christian Right organizations such as the National Christian Action Council, Moral Majority, and the Freedom Council, each founded to save America, couldn't save themselves. All have gone belly up, along with such publications as the Fundamentalist Journal and Conservative Digest. Jimmy Baker's Weakness for Money, Jimmy Swaggart's for Women, helped sink contributions to the New Right's political juggernaut faster than the American electorate thanked Pat Robertson's 1998 presidential campaign. And even after 12 years of Reagan and Bush, the New Right, once dubbed the centerpiece of the conservative movement, appears to have backslidden into political oblivion. Appearances, however, can be deceiving. Indeed, far from being defunct, the New Christian Right is more entrenched into the American political system now than ever before. "The evangelical right is back," wrote Thomas Atwood, editor of Policy Review, "better organized for state and local politics and less dependent upon highly visible national leaders, and more effective because it works through broader-based organizations not explicitly identified with evangelicalism." Close quote. In the 1990s, says political scientist Matthew Moen, the New Right altered the public dialogue and the congressional debate. In the 1990s, it is quietly infiltrating the power structure in order to gain influence in ways that it wasn't able to previously. And in some respects, with this new strategy, it is stronger now than ever before. Close quote. A new strategy was needed. Despite the overnight proliferation of an alphabet soup of New Right organizations, NICPAC, ACTV, NCAC, CLEARTV, CV, CWA, CSFC, FCPAC, CMA, NCAP, EF, AFC, NPFC, massive fundraising campaigns, and intense lobbying in Washington, D.C., the New Right for the whole 80s decade and into the early 90s achieved none of its major legislation, except perhaps the defeat of the Equal Rights Amendment. Its leaders managed to get the Prayer and School Amendment onto the Senate floor, no small feat, but were unable to translate that or much of anything else of substance into victories. Though the New Right supported Ronald Reagan, who convincingly uttered many of its platitudes, it loved, for example, his 1983 Evil Empire speech in Orlando, and who knighted the movement with political legitimacy, Reagan did not pursue the New Right's political agenda with the holy zeal that they had expected. He didn't produce a constitutional amendment outlawing abortion. He didn't get legislated prayer into schools. He didn't curtail the right of homosexuals, and he rarely went to church. His successor, blue-blooded Episcopalian George Bush, who has repeated some of the same platitudes as Reagan, though not as convincingly, did even less. And now they face a Clinton White House? Some affiliated with the religious right, wrote Tom Roberts, argue that aside from the notable exception of conservative appointments to the judicial system, including the Supreme Court, evangelicals have seen few rewards for their efforts at the polls. On April 20th, 1990, for example, representatives of the Gay and Lesbian Task Force, at the invitation of the White House, stood in the Oval Office for the signing of the Hate Crimes Bill. More than a decade after the New Right promised to bring morality to America, George Bush was bringing gays to the White House instead, and no doubt Bill Clinton will be bringing in even more. Obviously, whatever the New Christian Right did in the 80s didn't work. And considering their tactics, it's no wonder. However righteous some of its causes, its methods often weren't, and this made bad press on the evening news. Christian Voice published its infamous Candidates' Biblical Scorecard, which kept a record of incumbents who failed to register, quote, a pro-biblical vote on everything from a balanced Bungin Amendment to the Nicaraguan freedom fighters. Fundraising hysteria, like one wet letter that warned that donations to this organization, quote, may well be the difference between America surviving and America being destroyed by God's wrath, perhaps through nuclear fire and brimstone, didn't play well in the press or in Peoria. Alaska State Senator Edna DeVries' comment that non-Christians should leave the country, or Indiana Moral Majority Leader Greg Dixon's prayer hit list, or Baptist minister W.A. Criswell's statement that, quote, this notion of separation of church and state was the figment of some infidel's imagination, close quote, turned off many Americans who still harbor a healthy suspicion of mixing religion and politics. When the New Right's most public figure, Pat Robertson, publicly accused George Bush of engineering Jimmy Swaggart's sexual transgression in order to discredit Robertson's 1988 presidential campaign, it became obvious that the new Christian right needed a massive political and public relations overhaul. Evangelicals need to become students of the political process, said Robert Dugan, director of the Washington Office of the National Association of the Evangelicals. They need to move to greater sophistication with integrity and knowledge. They are Bible thumpers fresh from the corn patch, breathing hellfire and brimstone against legislatures who didn't pass Bible-based laws, are slowly being replaced by more politically astute conservatives working behind the scenes to promote the same agenda as the Bible thumpers, but without the hellfire and damnation. A new cadre has now come in, says Matthew Moen, who have the savvy and sophistication that they were once lacking. The new right has toned down the rhetoric, too. Jimmy Swaggart's warning to his political opponents that you, quote, have not set yourself against so-called moral McCarthyites, you have not set yourself against Hick fundamentalists, you have set yourself against God, close quote, is being replaced with a more sophisticated, less sectarian approach. Instead of calling the abortion struggle a battle to stop, quote, this national holocaust from bringing down the unmitigated wrath of the Almighty God upon this sin-laden, iniquitous nation, it is now a debate over the rights of the unborn. School prayer is now equal opportunity for religious values, and tuition tax credits have become freedom of choice for religious education. They don't as often, at least openly, call positions antithetical to theirs of the devil's. Homosexuals are not often publicly referred to as perverts and sodomists. Activists are trained to avoid the God called me to warn you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ that your political position is against his holy word oratory. Nevertheless, even now some New Right activists occasionally slip up. In 1992, Jay Grimstead, chairman of the New Right California Activist Network, mailed a letter to William B. Allen, a political science professor running for the U.S. Senate against conservative darling Bill Dannemeyer. Grimstead warned that, quote, we are calling upon you in the name of Jesus Christ, the King of the universe, to immediately step down from this foolish attempt at the Senate seat and to publicly announce that you are throwing your weight and your campaign behind the Dannemeyer effort for victory. If Allen refused to retreat from his, quote, foolish path, this political abortion that can only aid the forces of darkness, Grimston warned that besides political consequences, he might face heavenly ones too. We suspect, he prophesied, that God himself will make efforts to discipline you and judge this action of yours however he sees fit. As anyone who has been disciplined by our Heavenly Father can tell you, he can deal very forcibly with us. Though Grimstein claimed that it was a rough draft and later mailed a revision without the threats, the letter revealed that, despite their outward political conversion, the New Right's heart hasn't changed. Besides placing the wrath of God bombast, with exceptions for more acceptable terminology, the New Right has revised its overall strategy. Realizing that it can't win in Congress or the White House, at least for now, the new Christian right has been immersed in a nationwide campaign to quietly get involved in local, county, and state politics instead. The coming decade of the 90s posed the greatest opportunity for activists at the grassroots, says James Muffet, director of the Michigan Committee for Freedom. The time has come for us to take our eyes off the White House and focus on the grassroots. Working mostly through the Republican Party, the new Christian right is getting people into offices from school boards to state legislatures all across the nation. conservative evangelical Christians either run or help run the Republican Party in at least half a dozen states, wrote political analyst Rob Gerwitt. And they are campaigning and winning council seats and school board posts from Oregon to Georgia. They have, he said, quote, developed a group of experienced political strategists who are now surfacing in campaigns and organizations of mainstream candidates and political groups. The Christian right is no longer a political innocent. Its leaders have learned how to reach for power, close quote. And now they are reaching in places where it's more likely that they'll get it too. We tried to change Washington, said Robert Reed, director of Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition, when we should have been focusing on the states. The real battle of concern to Christians are in neighborhoods, school boards, city councils, and state legislatures, close quote. The key word epitomizing the new approach is coalition. Instead of a few highly concentrated power structures centralized in one area, small independent groups are spreading over America and working towards the same goals. In the 90s, said Tim LaHaye, president of Family Life Seminar and New Right leader, the religious right is going to be composed of a host of independently, locally sponsored and funded organizations that work in unison, but individually, close quote. This guerrilla approach has a distinct advantage over conventional warfare. First, you don't need as much political savvy to deal with a school board in Podunk, Arkansas, as with the United States Senate in Washington. And therefore, the less sophisticated cadres will be able to make an impact in places where previously they couldn't. Most Americans don't know much about local politics, most aren't involved, and most don't even care, an apathy that works to the new right's advantage. During the 1998 presidential campaign, for example, one poll showed that 49% of Americans didn't know that Lloyd Bentsen was Michael Dukakis' running mate. Voter turnout is usually low, too. Another situation that the new right seeks to use to its advantage. There is no doubt, wrote Dugan of the National Association of Evangelicals, that evangelical Christians can win the culture war by the sheer weight of their vote. Also, with this low-key approach, independent organizations working at the grassroots level are not likely to attract as much hostile media attention as did hordes of preachers in Washington, D.C. shouting Bible verses and declaring, "We're going to take over for Jesus. Hallelujah." Perhaps the best advantage of this grassroots congregational approach is that numerous independent groups dispersed over the nation are much harder to track than a few highly visible ones. It's going to be difficult, warned Joe Kahn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, to monitor the activity of so many small organizations. Recent California local politics epitomizes grassroots thrust. In the early 90s, the new right wrestled control of half the county Republican Central Committees, as well as the state board. In San Diego County, 60 new right activists, some running as stealth candidates, won seats on school board, water board, and the city council in November 1990. Conservative evangelicals left over from Pat Robertson's campaign not only remain in the state's political structure, but are working to take it over as well. Following the 1988 elections, wrote Fred Clarkson, Robertson's cadre took over the California Republic Assembly, a conservative party unit. The California Republican Assembly, the CRA, in alliance with Young Americans for Freedom, college Republicans, and a group of right-wing officials plotted to take over the county Republican committees and ultimately control the state board. Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition, unlike the defunct Moral Majority, is spreading the New Light political gospel at a local level, where it, quote, will promote Christian values through a network of state affiliates and country chapters, close quote. Having begun with a mailing list of 1.8 million names left over from Robertson's last political presidential gambit, as of this writing, the organization claims 250,000 members in 40 states, and according to Christian Coalition literature, the numbers are growing. If the response we are witnessing nationwide is any indication, wrote National Field Director of Christian Coalition Guy Rogers, Christians everywhere agree that it is time for such excellence in political power, for the message is spreading like prairie fire. Christian by the thousands are getting serious about impacting the arena of public policy. According to Christian Coalition promotional literature, it plans to represent Christian concerns before local councils, state legislatures, and Congress, as well as training Christian leaders for, quote, effective social and political action. One advertisement reads that, quote, now Christians can unite behind a grassroots movement that will change the status quo, close quote. Another, promoting a two-day Christian coalition leadership school, said, quote, believe it or not, the Lord may even want you to run for office. Another reads, a grassroots union of evangelicals, pro-family Roman Catholics and their allies, we are determined to redress the plundering of our Judeo-Christian heritage. Some of its material, especially in the secular press, is very savvy, indicative of the New Right's more seasoned approach and Pat Robertson's political maturation. On June 20th, 1990, Christian Coalition ran a full-page ad in the Washington Post, costing today $44,350, addressed to the Congress of the United States. In the form of a letter written by Robertson, the ad warned Congress about appropriating tax money for art that many Americans find offensive. There may be, the ad concluded, more homosexuals and pedophiles in your district than there are Roman Catholics and Baptists. You may find the working folks in your district want you to use their money to teach their sons how to sodomize one another. You may find that the Roman Catholics in your district want their money to be spent on pictures of a pope soaked in urine. But maybe not. There's one way to find out. Vote for the NEA appropriation just like Pat Williams, John Frohnemeyer, and the Gay and Lesbian Task Force want. And make my day. Signed, Pat Robertson. Robertson didn't warn about the wrath of an angry God falling upon those heathen who promote art done by unredeemed sodomites and perverts. Nor did he talk about the demise of our Judeo-Christian civilization or about a political holy war between the forces of darkness and light, so typical of the New Right bombast of the 1980s. Instead, the ad comes across as a forceful, well-reasoned entreaty that would appeal to many conscientious Americans, religious or not, who don't like the idea of $175 million being spent for various art projects that included, to quote Robertson, one man urinating in the mouth of another, close quote. The New Right's 1990 moral agenda doesn't differ much from its 1981. Now, however, using a more secular tone and basing its tenets not on the wrath of God theology, but on simple morality and common sense, the movement can marshal support from many Americans who, while not necessarily agreeing with its religious views, can sympathize with its political ones. You don't have to be a pre-trib, once-saved, always-saved, tongue-speaking Bible fundamentalist to not want tax money funding Robert Mapplethorpe homoerotica. Unquestionably, the most powerful asset the New Right possesses is the high moral ground it has firmly staked out on many positions. Even most people who are pro-choice don't like abortion, but see it as the best of bad choices. And what responsible citizen, secular or religious, isn't disgusted by the crime, drugs, and moral depravity of our cities? Who isn't concerned about America's schools, youth, morals, and culture? At least the New Right is making a serious effort to deal with these moral concerns, and that effort alone will marshal supporters in power. Listen to this quote. Today, ordinary Americans are being stuffed with garbage by Donahue, Gerardo, Ofra freak shows, cross-dressing in the marketplace, skinheads at your corner luncheonette, pipe psychologists rhapsodizing over the airways about the minds of serial killers and sex offenders, by Mary Povich News, by Hard Copy, by Howard Stern, by local newscasts that do special segments devoted to hyping hype. Last month, in supposedly sophisticated New York, the country's biggest media market, there ran a craven five-part series on the 11 o'clock news called Where Do They Get These People? A special report on where Gerardo and Ofra and Donahue get their freaks. The promo for this series featured Donahue interviewing a diapered man with a pacifier in his mouth. Close quote. This moral lament about America's media didn't come from Dr. James Dobson in his Focus on the Family radio program, but from Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein, not exactly James Dobson, in The New Republic, not exactly Focus on the Family. In the late 1980s, after the televangelist scandals, the Ivan Boesky Wall Street shenanigans, Iran-Contra, and the Gary Hart Donna Rice sleaze, self-flagellating articles in national magazines with such titles as What's Wrong or A Nation of Liars filled the newsstands. America went through another one of its periodic fits of morality that Europeans find so amusing. But nothing changed. The early 90s have vomited into America laps the Bill Clinton-Jennifer Flowers affair, the SNL scandal, Jeffrey Dahmer, the Rodney King beating verdict riot triptych, and the House banking ripoff. As long as a new Christian right not only remonstrates about our moral woes, as everyone from Jesse Jackson to David Duke does, but works full-time to remedy them, it will, especially as it matures, become more powerful. The strategy against the American left, wrote Pat Robertson in a newsletter sent to the members of his 700 Club, should be the same as General Douglas MacArthur employed against the Japanese in the Pacific. Bypass their strongholds, then surround them, isolate them, bombard them, and then blast the individuals out of their power bunkers with hand-to-hand combat. The battle for Imajigo was not pleasant, but our troops won it. The battle to regain the soul of America won't be pleasant either, but we will win it. Obviously, since his failed 1988 campaign, Robertson has been doing more than praying. Though the new right has avoided using high-profile leaders like Falwell, as it did in the 1980s, Robertson has taken the mantle. Besides his 700 Club, his law school, his political organizations, and his prosperous business ventures, Robertson manages to release a new book under his name almost yearly. His New World Order, 1991, which made the New York Times bestseller list, warned about a secret conspiracy involving the Illuminati, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the United Nations, which were all attempting to, quote, destroy the Christian faith and replace it with an occult-inspired world dictatorship that, he said, would include drunkards, drug dealers, communists, atheists, New Age worshippers of Satan, secular humanists, oppressive dictators, greedy money changers, revolutionary assassins, adulterers, and homosexuals. Robertson also had a section on the Ten Commandments. The utopians have talked of a world order, he wrote. Without saying so explicitly, the Ten Commandments set the only order that will bring world peace. He then summarized each. At the fourth, he lamented that there are no more religious Sunday laws, but only those that, quote, can be shown to have a clearly secular purpose, close quote. Robertson wrote, too, that, quote, only when people are permitted, read in their blue laws, to rest from their labors, to meditate upon God, to consider his way, to dream of a better world, can there be progress and genuine human betterment. The book is not without hypocrisy either. Robertson lamented how American tobacco companies export tobacco around the world, while in America, quote, we're learning about the dangers of tobacco, about lung cancer and emphysema, close quote. Meanwhile, under the same cover, he bragged about how the Christian Coalition's same Jesse Helms, one of the tobacco industry's most potent voices in Washington, from electoral defeat. In the book, Robertson made himself look like an authority on the United States and world history, international finance and banking, international relations, politics, law, and economics. In the bio on the back flap, it says that his 700 Club is now suddenly a news talk program. The New World Order also was sprinkled with references to Pat's numerous accomplishments, such as a broadcaster and an author and a longtime follower and participant in the political process. He said, in Guatemala City, I was personally giving out relief supplies to some 8,000 people. In my 1987 address to the Council on Foreign Relations, in a major address to the National Convention of the Republican Party in New Orleans, I mentioned, I served in the 1st Marine Division in Korea under the overall command of General Douglas MacArthur. After the general election, I spoke to President-elect Carter as a former candidate for the presidential nomination of the Republican Party. When I met the then Prime Minister of Israel, and on, though he hasn't said so publicly, Robertson is probably looking for another presidential gambit, maybe in 1996, and his impressive record, so clearly expressed in the New World Order, supposedly refutes charges that he is unqualified. Another powerful figure in the new right of the 1990s is Dr. James Dobson. Widely respected among Christians, including Adventists, Dr. Dobson advocates such solid Christian principles regarding family and child rearing that he sounds like Ellen White. In his Focus on the Family magazines arise at 1.9 million homes each month, including mine, more homes even than Parenting magazine. His first parenting book, Dare to Discipline, has so far sold 2 million copies. His first privately distributed film on child rearing reached 60 million viewers. That's more than who saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And his radio program, Focus on the Family, is heard by a million listeners daily on 1,350 outlets. For those interested in applying conservative Christian values to their home and family, Dr. Dobson is deservedly a hero. He's so popular, in fact, that he has even been urged to run for office, something that he says he will never do. 18 years ago, Dr. Dobson said, I was talking about the family in the context of society, and that is the limit of my public role now. Though Dr. Dobson may not be running for office, he has become exceedingly political. Through his Family Research Council, the political lobbying arm of his nationwide Focus on the Family organization, Dobson has immersed himself into new right politicking. Under the direction of former Reagan domestic policy advisor Gary Bauer, the Family Research Council has grown from 2 to 17 workers and now has a chapter in almost 20 states. Unlike many of the new right organizations in the 1990s, Family Research Council is centered in Washington, D.C., where it is, quote, striving to build an understanding of the pro-family agenda in both legislative and executive branches of the federal government. From the White House to Capitol Hill, our lobbyists are working to ensure that the needs and values of the family are known and respected. But even with the Family Research Council focusing on Washington, Dr. Dobson promotes grassroots coalitions around the country. A Religious News Service report headline reads, Dobson Organization aiding formation of pro-family coalitions. Dr. Dobson's own literature states that, quote, many of the major family-related public policy battles are won and lost at state and local levels. Consequently, it is essential that the various activist groups lobbying for traditional vows in each state work together to accomplish their goals. With this in mind, Focus on the Family has been actively involved in helping these groups coordinate their efforts through the formation of a statewide pro-family coalitions. About half the states already have one of these coalitions in operation. The goal is to develop pro-family coalitions in 50 states. As are most other New Right organizations, Dobson's is also working quietly. Focus on the Family spokesman Michael Jameson says Dobson, quote, doesn't want media scrutiny. Dobson has also been urging followers, quote, to keep secret their participation in the coalition and even that a coalition exists. Dobson entered politics quietly, said a rare Washington Post profile, without the press conferences and pomp that surrounded predecessors like Jerry Falwell. This reflects the maturing of a certain segment of evangelicals within mainstream politics, particularly in the Republican Party. While the coalition's work is quiet and usually behind the scenes, Dobson himself has an influential public outreach. He is available to followers and believers in virtually every radio market in the United States on a daily basis, said liberal activist lawyer Barry Lynn. This gives him tremendous capacity to deliver messages to Congress on specific issues. He can literally launch mailbags of letters to Congress simply by talking about a piece of legislation on his daily radio program. Dobson's influence, however, comes more from the sanity of his stances than from his media access, which is minuscule compared to that of his opponents. While Magic Johnson, for instance, whose media access dwarfs Dobson's, advocates safe sex, Dobson, along with the New Right, uncompromisingly stresses abstention from any sex, safe or not, until marriage, especially when condoms can't guarantee protection. According to Dr. Dobson, not one of the 800 sexologists attending a recent conference raised a hand when asked if they would trust a thin rubber sheath to protect them during intercourse with a known HIV-infected person. And yet, Dr. Dobson continued, they're willing to tell our kids that safe sex is within reach and they can sleep around with impunity? Who can argue with that logic? Who wants their children exposed to these risks? And what organization wielding any substantive influence are advocating abstention from sex until marriage except the New Right? Unfortunately, along with the high moral ground they have carved out on these and other issues, The new right has taken a dangerously rough road on individual liberty and freedom of religion. The Adventist scenario of last days, clarified in the Great Controversy, can happen only when this nation refutes the principle of church-state separation that are embodied in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, principles that the new right openly wars against. A newsletter done by Pat Robertson's American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLJ, captured the new right disdain for the wall of separation of church and state with the headline, "Tear Down This Wall." The author, Keith Fournier, of Evangelical Catholics, who is now the executive director of Robertson's ACLJ, see the connection? Use the Berlin Wall as an analogy to America's metaphorical one. "Yet there is a wall," he explained, "which has been mistakenly erected in our beloved country. Its impact on religious freedom has had perhaps an even more devastating effect. It is the so-called wall of separation of church and state." Fournier then warns that this wall has been used as a club against the free exercise of religion and free speech, which have been so hampered in America that Christians, he said, might find more religious freedom on the streets of Moscow than in the United States. For this reason, not its warning against safe sex or its crusade against abortion or what it might do to the sales of Playboy, the new right poses a threat. The persecution outlined in Great Controversy won't come from militant gays, secular humanists, atheists, or Marxists, but from professed Christians. "It will be declared," Ellen White wrote, "that men are offending God by violation of the Sunday Sabbath, that the sin has brought calamities which will not cease until Sunday observance shall be strictly observed." Atheists, secular humanists, and liberals won't declare that Sunday law violators are offending God. Conservative Christians, like those in the New Right, the kind who already blame America's woes on its violation of God's laws, will merely replace violation of Sunday Sabbath with abortion or pornography or secular humanism in her above quote, "and you have New Right rhetoric today." "The issue is survival," wrote Jerry Falwell. "If the scriptures and human history teach us anything, it is that no society that violates divine precepts can long survive." "Ministers who deny the obligation of divine law," Ellen White wrote, "will present from the pulpit the duty of yielding obedience to civil authorities as ordained of God. Their denial comes not from open rejection of the law of God, but of the true Sabbath, which the new right, despite all its pro-God's law rhetoric, does reject. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all." James 2:10. Yet all the New Right leaders repudiate the seventh-day Sabbath in favor of Sunday, a day with no biblical sanctity. Most of them have certainly been exposed to the Sabbath truth. Though some will join those who keep the commandments of God, Revelation 14:12, most will continue to scorn it. Meanwhile, as it gains political power, the New Right is moving toward a fulfillment of Ellen White's warnings of persecutions by Christians united with the state. She wrote, "As the Protestant churches reject the clear scriptural argument in defense of God's law, they are now adopting a course which will lead to persecution of those who conscientiously refuse to do what the rest of the Christian world are doing and acknowledge the claims of the papal Sabbath." Non-Adventists see it too. American Civil Liberties Union Executive Director Ira Glasser warned about those who will, quote, "shape America in their image, an America dominated by government-imposed religious values," close quote. However distasteful the ACLU might be to most Adventists, Glasser described the future perfectly, even prophetically, for, quote, "an America dominated by government-imposed religious values," close quote, is exactly what the Great Controversy warns about. She writes, "When the leading churches of the United States, uniting upon such points of doctrine as are held by them in common, shall influence the state to enforce their decrees and to sustain their institutions, then Protestant America will have formed an image of the Roman hierarchy, and the infliction of civil penalties upon dissenters will inevitably result." Though the New Right hasn't attained enough clout for this type of persecution to happen yet, it's moving in that direction. This trend was clearly seen at the 1992 Republican National Convention, which at times, according to one news report, had the look of a religious revival. The Republican stress on family values, admittedly short-lived, came from the influence of the conservative evangelicals within the party structure. Partisans of the Christian right, wrote Washington Post reporter E.J. Dionne, not only flexed their muscles organizationally and had power beyond their numbers, but also saw Bush's campaign adopt one of their favorite themes, traditional family values, as a rallying point for the fall campaign. The Wall Street Journal reported one source is estimating that evangelical conservatives accounted for as much as, quote, 40% of the delegates in Houston, said New Right activist Marvin Meyer. Quote, if I didn't know any better, I would assume the Republican Party platform was written by the religious right, close quote. A few weeks after the Republican convention, Christian Coalition held its second annual Road to Victory conference in Virginia Beach. At the three-day planning and strategy session, which included George Bush as a speaker, Pat Robertson told cheering delegates the last night of the conference that whatever the 1992 outcome election is, quote, we will be back in 93, we will be back in 94, we will be back in 95, we will be back in 96, we will be back in 97, we will be back in 98, we will be back in 99, we will be back until we win it all. Indeed, even before Clinton's electoral landslide, New Right leaders were wondering if it would not be to their advantage for the Democrats to win the White House. That way, if Clinton turns out to be another Jimmy Carter or worse, the New Right can come back in 1996 with a vengeance, as it did in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, who swept into office in a backlash against Carter. The New Right is already blaming the recent Republican loss on Bush's refusal to follow its agenda. As soon as the 1992 election ended, even before, actually, the New Right set its eyes on 1996. As Robertson said, the conservative Christian agenda will be back. Take his word on this one. In one sense, the title, The New Christian Right, is a misnomer. It's neither new, it started in the 1970s, nor so Christian, its tactics have hardly always been Christ-like, or so right, it holds some dangerous views of church-state separation. What's new is the approach. Like David Duke, who shed his Ku Klux Klan hood for a three-piece suit and won a seat in the Louisiana state legislature, evangelicals are mastering the game. They now understand, among other things, that publicly threatening the wrath of God on those who support welfare payments to the poor or who object to tuition tax credits just won't cut it in 20th century America. They are smarter, more sophisticated, and more tactful than they were in the 1980s, and therefore more dangerous. What this new, low-key, grassroots strategy reveals is that, far from being dead, the new Christian right, in the lowest sense of the phrase, has been born again.